You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good. Had a day off work today. The roads are completely iced over. Canceled school all around us today, and my 40-minute drive to work was going to take over 2 hours due to all the accidents, so I decided to take one for the team and call in.
Well, we appreciate you doing that because it gives you and me the opportunity to knock out some more of these prospect podcasts. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. So, yeah, let's just jump right into it and talk about the Brewers, who have a good system. It may change here soon. There's talk that they may go after Yelich.
Believe it when I see it.
Yeah, but we'll see. But let's talk as is. What do you think of the Brewers farm system?
I like it, man. They got a lot of high upside talent. I think a lot of their hitters, most of them are a little bit too boom or bust for my liking. But it's a perfect fantasy system, and then, you know, you get a lot of guys that are potential all-around contributors, or, you know, there could be nothing, but you like the speed and power upside a lot of these guys have.
All right. Well, why don't you tell me about some of the guys that are towards the top of the system?
We'll start off with Lewis Brinson. I think everyone knows the struggles with Brinson last year with making contact, and throughout his whole career, really. He's made significant improvements in that throughout his career. We're talking about a guy that had decent contact rates, you know, the last couple of years. Went down to his major league contact rate, though, and only 47 at-bats was 64%, and that's not good. But, you know, he plays in AAA in Colorado Springs, and that's a tough place to get anything of value out of. His last two seasons at Colorado Springs, 382, 387, 618, and 331, 400, 562. It's a enormous offensive park, kind of like Vegas is in the PCL, and you don't get much value out of it, especially when your weakness is plate skills. You know, if you can hit extra base hits, you know, 45% of the time, you're going to swing at everything there, right? Because there's just so much reward. So I think it's Brinson. This is the time for him to either, you know, be up on the big roster or use him as a trade piece, which they seem to be talking about with Yelich. But the thing with Brinson, I think the thing that hurts him is him and Keon Broxton are very similar type players. But and that's the problem right now, because Keon Broxton's kind of established as a guy for them, and Brinson is a scary proposition because of the, you know, the contact rate. He could completely bomb out. He could bottom out. But if he gets everything going right, I'm high on Brinson. I have him a 2020 potential player for a long time. If he can get the skills going and get swing and miss in check. He's a good defensive outfielder, one of the best athletes in the minors. 6'3", 170. He's got some major projection. He'll fit easily in my probably top 15 for prospects, and maybe even top 10. I've been high on him for a long time. I've cooled a little bit because I figured they would have traded Braun by now, so he'd have a place to play. That's not the case. So as of right now, he's going to have to go to AAA next year because he's not the type of player that could be a really good bench bat for you just because his contact rate, he's going to need regular at-bats. So I don't know if you agree with that sentiment or not. Guys like him, they'll make a lot of contact, typically need a lot of reps.
It feels like all offseason long we've been talking or hearing, not talking, hearing about the Brewers potentially trading an outfielder to kind of make room for him.
Right. I mean, this is a guy that could be 30-30, so we're talking about someone with serious skills.
Yeah. And like you said, there's nothing to be gained by him going back to
No, he's owned that level.
So
he's owned that level already, twice.
I hope the Brewers just decide let's at least just keep him on the roster, and maybe we'll play a little bit of, you know, outfielder musical chairs to, you know, continuously get him, you know, at bats in, you know, 3 to 4 games a week until we have the ability to move someone, because they just do need to move someone. They've got just a glut of talent.
I think the right approach for them is to trade Brinson, to be honest with you, while his value is still there. Brinson or Keon Broxton.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my, this is going to be lame, but I have a source. One of my friends I went to high school with, is a prominent writer at a couple online resources, was responsible for bringing John Heyman into where he's currently at now. He was at the winter meetings and was kind of talking to him. We kind of met up for a couple beers and stuff over the winter break when he was back around, and he was telling me that the buzz around the winter meetings was the Brewers were offering up Lewis Brinson for Chris Archer. Brinson was the centerpiece of the package, and Tampa, I can't fault them for this because Archer's your franchise star now, especially with Longoria being gone. They wanted a more sure thing, and Brinson was too boom or bust for them. They wanted no part of Brinson at all in the package, which I think is a fine approach, I guess. But I ultimately, Brinson's the best second piece you'll get it. But there's not a lot of places where he could be the second. You know what I mean? Like, he's a top-end talent. If you get him as a second piece, you're doing that deal in a second. I get the maybe not using him as a centerpiece, but I think Brinson and, you know, because Domingo Santana is a hell of a player. He's not going anywhere. In my opinion, he shouldn't go anywhere. Braun is not going anywhere for a couple reasons. I think last on the list is because the Brewers want him a lot. and I think they're still fancy themselves as contenders a little bit. And as they should, I think they're going to take a step back. I think their pitching is going to fall backwards if they don't add to it, especially without Nelson for, half the year at least.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they need to move Brinson while his value is still hot and before he can maybe even have a chance to crater out. So I think they need to do that, but I like him long term. So,
all right, let's move on to the next guy. Who you got?
I like, Keston Hiura a lot. And I think I cut it real easy with him. He had a Tommy John surgery, before his senior season in college. So he played DH. He was strictly a DH in college. He's going to be cleared to play second base now, as he came, he went to UC Irvine, hit .442, .567, .693 in college with a 20% walk rate, 8 homers and 9 stolen bases. So that, he's an elite hit tool guy. His debut in low A, he hit .333, .374, .476, 77 contact, 6% walk rate. I think this guy has potential to win batting titles in the future, and I think second base is his future home in Milwaukee. So I think he's going to move quick once he establishes himself being healthy. I mean, he could be in Double A by midseason, and then when you're in Double A, you're always one phone call away. So I think he could play a prominent role in Milwaukee in 2019. They don't have a permanent solution at second base. Jonathan Villar kind of went backwards, and he's got another year to prove himself, obviously. But Keston Hiura is a guy to own for sure. He's a top 30 guy for me, just because the hit tool is so great.
Where would you take him in terms of, like, if you're in a first year player draft? You think he you know, obviously, number one is Ohtani. Number two is Robert.
I have Royce Lewis and Robert 2-3, like you said.
Okay. So would you take him 4?
Looking at this right now, on my list right now, I have them 2, 3, 4, and I have Mackenzie Gore 4 and Keston Hiura 5.
Okay.
And Gore and Hiura, spoiler, are 29 and 30, so they're back-to-back. So that's personal preference, I guess.
Yeah, and I think I would take Hiura over.
Can't fault you for that. Sure. And then, like, the next step below them is guys like, you know, Helio Ramos and Joe Adell.
Yeah.
Right. Stuff like that. So that gives you an idea where he's at. He's a very nice player. Move on to the next guy, Monty Harrison. You want to talk about a breakout campaign? This is him. He was a guy. He still has this issue. He struck out a lot. Premium athlete. Was a shortstop after he was drafted. The Brewers shifted him to the outfield fairly quickly. 6'3", 220, so he's got that athletic build. 272, 350, 481 across two levels of A-ball, low A and high A. 28 doubles, 21 home runs, and 27 stolen bases. Was only caught 4 times. Not the only Brewer we're going to touch on today that went 20-20 in the minor leagues, which is kind of crazy. Not many players did that. I want to say last track, there was 4 or 5 guys that went 20-20 in the minors, and the Brewers have 2 of them. The hit tool is the question for me, if he's going to make enough contact. That's the issue with Harrison. Last year in low A, 69%, and high A, 70%, so that's well below average for the league. So that's going to be an issue. He profiles pretty similar to Lewis Brinson, to be honest with you. Speed, power, just he's not quite as athletic, in my opinion, and he's not quite as good defensively in the outfield. So I kind of drag him a little bit lower than Brinson. He might steal more bases, but he's in the same boat as far as contact like Brinson and having the 2020 potential. I have him probably around the 50 to 60 range on my list just because, again, he's going to run into that crowded outfield situation in Milwaukee unless they make a move. But, again, making a move for Christian Yelich doesn't really uncrowd the outfield. It makes it kind of worse, to be honest. So because Yelich is incredibly young and they still have guys like Santana and they can't get rid of Braun like we touched on. So Monty Harrison's got a foul. He's got contact concerns. He's behind Brinson as far as contact as well. If you look at the levels, he made less lower contact percentage every level than Brinson, and Brinson has big issues with that. So to put that in mind, bake that into your price. Brett Phillips, another outfield prospect. He's major league ready. Fared well in his 87-game sample, 276, 351, 448, had four homers and five steals in 87 games with the big club, so that's nice. 61% contact rate. Have you sensed the theme yet? Besides Keston Hira,
mm-hmm.
A lot of guys that don't make a lot of contact, which is the major leagues in a nutshell right now. AAA Colorado Springs, 305, 377, 567 last year, 11% walk rate, 9% walk rate in the major leagues. Can play all four outfield spots, which helps him and hurts him in this sense because he's going to be pigeonholed in the fourth outfielder role, which is why I think Brinson, if he's not going to make the major league team, is going to go down because Brett Phillips is going to cover that reserve role. Especially being a left-handed hitter, all three of the Milwaukee starters in the outfield right now are right-handed. So Phillips would give him the left-handed edge on that as well. Opposite way, he hits the opposite way very nice, uses off-fields. Not going to be a big homer guy, not going to be a big power guy. He's going to settle in probably 15-15. I think he profiles similar to what Harrison Bader does for the Cardinals, but he's obviously a left-handed swinger. And I think his hit tool is a little bit more refined. He doesn't chase. He's not as aggressive. So I think Brett Phillips is a guy, and he has an annoying laugh. So if you have annoying laughs in your league, he's a good guy for that.
It's an 80 grade laugh.
No, it's a 20 grade laugh. So we differ on laugh grades. that's something we have to iron out. But he's 20 grade. So we'll move on to the next guy. We'll get to another middle infielder. We talked on Keston Hira, who's probably the second baseman of the future, which means he's gonna have to battle with this guy. I signed Diaz. I know me and Mike have been high on Diaz for a long time. I'm going to throw you an interesting stat that I read. Came from, I believe it was BP. I'm not exactly sure, so I apologize. I'm going to try to find it. You know, Eysen Diaz, if you look at the profile, he's a guy, you're going to be shocked. He struggles to make consistent contact. You know, looking at contact rate of 68% in high A. He struggled to 222 average, but he 334 on OBP. So he can walk 13 homers, 9 stolen bases, went 20 and 11 the year before that. And 13 and 12 the year before that, homers and speed. So he's got that. He's a second baseman who projects in the major leagues. I don't really project him to steal more than 8 to 10 bags. I just don't think he's got the premium top-end speed. Obviously, you know, the contact is an issue. I think he's a second baseman long-term. He's played a lot of shortstop this year. I think he's ultimately going to be a second baseman. He's an aggressive hitter. I think a power-only second baseman, I don't know how much value that carries anymore. Second base, while not deep in premium top-end talent, is a deep position overall, wouldn't you agree, as far as usable players?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't think it's...
Well, I'm going to throw this. Let me throw this number at you first. There were six second basemen who hit at least 20 homers in 2017 and finished outside the top 20 in fantasy value for second baseman.
Yeah,
six.
I think it was deep last year. I question those who say that it's a deep position this year.
Right, because you lose Trey Turner.
Well, and I think, too, like don't get me wrong, there are names that can, you know, be suitable, but there's also some really high variance names, Javier Baez being one, Chris Taylor. Mm-hmm. I mean, would it completely shock you if Chris Taylor, you know, wasn't a top 100 player next year? It wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't shock me.
Whit Merrifield, if he returns to... I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons to believe in guys like Chris Taylor and Whit Merrifield. I think there's a lot of reasons to not believe in them as well. I mean, you know, and I think when people start, you know, pointing out lower end of the pool, you're also pointing out guys with really obvious issues. You know, Paul DeJong, I know you love him, but
there's obviously some red flags there. Jose
sure.
Peraza, huge red flags there. So I don't know if second base is going to end up being as deep as maybe we think it is.
That's fair. I mean, I see the concerns. You know, the thing with Aisan Diaz, though, I think power only is pretty much what he's going to be.
Like Jonathan Scope-like?
Yeah, I think he can walk more, but I just don't know where the batting average is going to sit for Diaz. I think it's going to be better, but that's based off projection. He hasn't really proven that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a 270 guy with 20 home runs and 8 to 10 bags. Nice player, but
we're not talking about a guy that's necessarily a top 100 player year in, year out.
Right.
And if
right.
you're rostering a prospect in a number in the majority of dynasty leagues, that's what you're hoping to hit eventually.
Right, I agree with that. That's very fair. Next guy, we'll shift to. We're going to stay in the middle infield. Another guy who's hard to put a fantasy value on because he had such drastically different campaigns in 2017. But he split it between two levels, AA and AAA. We're talking about Mauricio Dubon, diminutive guy, former Red Sox prospect, probably a utility guy. 276, 338, 351 in AA Biloxi. Went to AAA in the PCL. This is how inflated the PCL is. 272, 320, very similar on base and OBP. 420 slug. 268 at bats in AA, 224 in AAA. Hit two home runs in AA, hit six in the PCL. Not that that's meaningful in that sense, but eight home runs and 38 stolen bases is the stat line. Now, I don't think home runs are going to be a thing for him at all. I think you're looking at a guy who's going to hit 5 to 7. Probably profile similar to a Wilmer Defoe, to be honest with you. A guy that's going to play all over the infield. His value is going to be tied into the fact that he's a very good play, especially in like NL deep NL only format or something, because he's going to be able to play all three infield spots, probably the outfield too, to be honest. He's going to be a batting average dependent guy, and he's going to be a stolen base guy. I think anything else you look out of those out of those any different categories, you're asking for a little bit of trouble. He doesn't make a lot of strong contact. He gets himself out a lot. He's an aggressive hitter. He swings, makes a lot of weak contact. And the speed, despite being 38 stolen bases, isn't really plus like burner style. I would put it as a 60 on the 80 scale, so it's plus, but on the top end or the low end of plus, if that makes any sense. So I love him, but I think he might get overvalued because you might see that 38 steals and see that he's almost major league ready. And I would temper back the expectations a little bit. We'll jump to some arms real quick. Brandon Woodruff is going to be a major leaguer this season. He was last. He's probably the front runner for the fifth spot in the rotation right now. I like Woodruff. He kind of had a good pop-up campaign in 2017 just because he wasn't getting a lot of publicity anywhere and just jumped up with a – and he reached the major leagues, which is an impressive number, but he didn't fare that well, 32 strikeouts in 43 innings, pitched to a 4.81 ERA, had a 4.31 ERA in the tough environment in AAA, 71 strikeouts in 77 innings. So as you see, strikeouts aren't where he's going to – aren't going to be, but if you watch a pitch, you think he's going to have more in there. 95 with the fastball, sits around 93, 94, can touch 95, has a nice slider. Kind of looks like a cutter just because of the late movement it has. I think the best thing Woodruff brings to the table is I think he's going to be he can be a guy that's going to push 200 innings, and you don't see that too often anymore. I think he's got that type of durability, so just in that, he's an above-average pitcher that can pitch for 200 innings, so he's going to carry significant value in that aspect. I don't think he ever reaches the top 40 pitchers or anything like that, but I think he's a guy, he could be your fourth or fifth starter for your dynasty team, and you're in a pretty good situation. Because I think he can give you a lot of innings, and we don't see that very often anymore. And the Brewers have a good back end of the bullpen behind him, so that's going to help that. Let's see who else we can go pitching-wise. Corbin Burns, he's getting a lot of hype. 2016 fourth round draft pick, 6'2", 185. Fastball slider combination is just ridiculous. Late run on the fastball, tough to square up. Slider drops off the table. Has a curveball that's a good 12-6 offering. He also has a changeup that he can throw that flashes. I think he's got a number. He's got such a deep arsenal that he's got number two upside, even for fantasy, because I think the strikeouts are going to be there. He hasn't quite unlocked all the potential yet, but his career numbers in the minor leagues are just disgusting. He doesn't walk very many guys, and has a nice usable four-pitch mix already, maybe five if you want to classify the slider and cutter as two separate pitches. But he pitched in high A and double A last year to a 1.67 ERA over 145 innings, only 103 hits allowed, 36 walks, and 140 strikeouts. So, again, I think the strikeouts are going to take a tick up, so I'm betting on the profile here. Fourth-round pick, like I said, out of St. Mary, 6'3", 205. Getting an invite to big league camp this year, not going to make the roster out of the bigs out of the camp, but I think he's a guy that's going to be in the mix for a call up pretty fairly soon, if they need some pitching help, which I think they will. Let's see, we'll go to Corey Ray, University of Louisville. I'm kind of disappointed in the outcome so far. What I've seen from Ray, the hit tool has evaporated since he turned pro, but he still flashes that power speed combination. 7 homers and 24 steals in a tough environment in high A last year. Teammate with Aysan Diaz and Lucas Erceg, we'll get to in a second. They all had disappointing seasons, but I think it's the environment in high A. Had 5-9 homers and steals last year in the Florida State League, which was an aggressive assignment. So they backed it up by, again, sending him to high A this year, and he didn't really have a good go of it. A lot of swing and miss issues, 65% contact rate for a supposedly polished college hitter. I comped him to Curtis Granderson coming out of the draft. You know, he's from the Chicago area like Granderson. He went to Louisville, first-round pick, obviously in the top five. But the K percentage is the thing right now that's killing him, and he hasn't been able to unlock the power. The walk rate is still strong. Contact rate's weak, and he's having trouble picking up spin. He's a good runner and a good defender. I think he's a major leaguer just because the defensive skills are so high and the base running and all that stuff plays up. But as far as a fantasy asset, he's not going to be much unless he can hit. Lucas Erceg was in high A all season. Again, tough environment to hit. Third base prospect, 256, 307, 417. Not a great line, but they thought highly enough of him to promote him to Colorado Springs for the playoffs. So he went from high A to triple A. And contact rate in high A was 81%, and his brief sample in triple A was up around 90. So if he can make consistent contact like he has done his whole career, the power is going to play because he's got 20 to 25 homer pop in that bat. He's a line drive hitter. Pre-draft comps, he drew comparisons to someone like a Matt Carpenter, which I don't know if the on-base skills are going to be that high. And he had a little dip in hard contact rate this year, so it makes me think maybe he had an injury of some sort or something. He doesn't have overly quick skills. No, nothing when you watch him. Jumps out at you. The bat speed's meh. He seems to have a hard time with velocity, which is a problem nowadays. I think he can correct that a little bit. I like the skills. I don't think he's a game-changing talent, which I once thought he might be. I think he's going to be a third baseman that can hit, you know, 260 with like a 340 OBP and probably 15 to 20 homers and a couple stolen bases. That's not really an exciting fantasy profile. But a left-handed hitter in Milwaukee is a good thing to be, and that's what he is, 6'3", 200 pounds. So he's got projection still. I'm not giving up on him yet, but he had a little bit of a disappointing season. Tristan Lutz is a guy that I know you like. Was a high school pick out of Texas, and he played in the Pioneer League. Already climbed up past the rookie league in Arizona and went to the Pioneer League. Slugged an identical 559 in both leagues. 11% walk rate, 77% contact rate in the Pioneer League against guys that are about 2 or 3 years older than him is a very, very exciting thing. 11% walk rate, 77% contact rate, like we touched on. 9 home runs and 3 stolen bases in just over 155 at-bats. He's a center fielder right now. That's not going to happen. He's going to have to move off that position to a corner, but whatever. Plus bat speed, which I think with his size at 6'3", 210, right-handed hitter, it's going to be lead to a lot of power down the road. Lutz has 30 to 35 home runs upside. I just don't know where the hit tool is going to be, but I'm encouraged by the walk rate and contact rate right now. So I have no problem at this day and age, obviously is subject to change, to project him to be a 275, 280 hitter with 35 home runs. I think he's got that kind of upside. Now, does he reach that? I mean, a lot of things need to go in his favor. I don't think he's going to help much in the speed department. He might be a 5 to 10 stolen base kind of guy just because he's athletic. But this is a big year for him because he's going to have to go to tough environment in the Florida State League or, you know, the Carolina League and hit two very tough offensive leagues. He can go to A-ball. And we'll see what he does. But I still have big things for him. I like Tristan Lutz a lot. He's definitely a guy in your first year player drafts. If you miss out on a lot of those guys we touched on earlier, you can get Tristan Lutz. You're doing okay. And a lot of teams, you know, the way he's going to fall, say you're in a 20-team league, first year player draft, he's probably going to go in the 15 to 20 range, which means your team's competitive, right? If you're picking that late, you're going to get a guy you're not really worried about him making a quick major league impact, so you can afford to let him, because he's going to take a while, because he's got a lot of potential skills that need to manifest themselves. He's going to take a little bit to develop, but he's got the skill set to be great. So that's the name to follow. You picked him at RDI, didn't you?
I believe I did.
Yeah, so that's a nice pick. So
I'll be trading him at some point. So
you probably will, because you're in a situation where you probably can't afford to keep a guy like that, just because your keeper situation is going to be up against the numbers. But
yeah, unless everything goes to absolute hell, I'll be trading virtually all my prospects in RDI.
Right, which is, if you know that going in, that's a good strategy. Here's another question: if in a league setup like that, not to get on a rant, but if we didn't have a rule where you had to have 10 minor leaguers, would you have taken any?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I don't know, because there are good trade pieces, but yeah.
I might have taken one or two. Like, I think in the original Friends Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, I took like two or three high upside prospects at the end of the draft just in case one of them hit, I could trade them for a piece. But right. that to me, you know, in a Dynasty League like RDI where I'm only playing for year one and not worrying about the rest of the years coming up, these guys are trade pieces for me. That's all they are. But I like a guy like him because he has such high upside. We could be talking about him as a top, you know, 25, top 50 prospect coming into next year that will be really attractive to people.
Right. I agree with that. And we'll move on because we're short on time, but I like that strategy. And we'll talk about another outfielder I touched on. Remember the Brewers had two 2020 guys. Troy Stokes Jr., very underrated guy, 21 years old, fourth-round pick out of a Baltimore high school. He's 21, looks like he's 41 in his picture on MLB.com, so that's always good to look at. But 251, 341, 447, 28 doubles, 5 triples, 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases between high A and double A. High A, like we touched on, the Carolina League is a tough offensive environment. He had 19 doubles, 5 triples, 14 homers, and stole 21 bases there. Hit 250, 344, 445 in that tough environment. So that's encouraging. They promoted him to double A down the stretch there. I question the hit tool, and I think ultimately he's just a bench bat. But those are some nice numbers. He's got plus speed. He can play all three outfield spots. I don't know if I mentioned he's an outfielder or not. My bad if I didn't. I think the hit tool is what's going to hold him back, making contact. He's going to be a bench player, but he's going to be a nice bench player just because he can do everything. He's going to fall into the same situation and go to prolonged slumps just because he's not getting regular at-bats, because a guy like this, you know, needs regular at-bats. But he's got to watch. He's a couple years away, but Troy Stokes is an interesting flyer to take. I'm going to go real quick with these last couple guys. A lot of pitchers that I'm kind of meh on, and the industry likes a little bit better. I'll start with Luis Ortiz. I'm concerned about the body, concerned about the makeup, and concerned about the stuff, in the sense that the stuff is elite, but the strikeout totals that come with it are not. It's always been the story with Ortiz. 94 innings, 79 strikeouts in Double A, which is weird because he's got a 92 to 95 mile an hour fastball that touches 96 with crazy run, above average slider, and a changeup. He uses that against both lefties and righties, and he doesn't strike out more than that, more than he does. It's kind of weird to me. I've never really understood it. He's been promoted aggressively throughout his career, and he's had numbers that on the surface look great. You dig down a little deeper, and they're not encouraging. I think his major league career, you know, I think he's definitely has a chance. He's a high floor guy for having a bad body, which is weird to say, because I think his stuff will play up in the bullpen if it comes to that, just because, you know, he's not, I think in the bullpen he can be a monster. He came over in that the trade with Brinson from Texas for Lucroy. So he was one of the big pieces in that trade. But I just don't know. I think he's a potential, at best, a starting pitcher 4 or 5 for you in fantasy, because that's if he unlocks more of the strikeouts, because I think he's going to walk too many guys with the whip issues. But I think he could be a dominant reliever. I just don't know if you want to give up on that, because I think a lot of days moving a guy to a relief role kind of sounds like you lost. But I don't think so. So I still like the profile a little bit, but not nearly as much as everyone else. Trent Grisham is another guy we'll talk about. He's used to be Trent Clark. Changed his last name to Grisham, I suppose. So he's a guy that I liked a little bit. He's a good OBP guy, so if you're in OBP league, bump him up. But I don't think he's anything more than a 250, 260 hitter, 15 to 18 homers and 15 stolen bases, which is nice. But you can do a little bit better if you're going to roster someone, wait this long for a guy that's only in low A, to wait that long on a, or high A, I'm sorry. High A. 223, 360, 348 in high A, 8 homers and 37 stolen bases. The stolen bases are nice, obviously, but I just think the upside for doesn't have the pure speed to be a burner like that. So I think the upside isn't all as great as that stat line says it is. Mario Feliciano is a catcher, an advanced catcher that was in low A. I think he can hit 20 home runs. I just question the hit tool. I like the defensive skills. Jacob Gatewood is probably a 70 raw power guy. Strikes out 28% of the time, so he fits in with these other guys. 15 homers in high A and double A, which are it's very tough places to play. Strikes out a lot, but a lot of it's due to being really patient and taking a lot of pitches he probably shouldn't. So he needs to jump on things. He's got a long swing to top it off, so he's got some holes. Probably a first baseman only. Came up as a shortstop, played some third, played some outfield. Probably a first baseman now just because of the size, but he's going to be a really athletic first baseman, so maybe you can fake him in the outfield a little bit if you have to. Jacob Nottingham is a catcher with some thump, but doesn't hit for average. So he's improving defensively, but a guy that's a 200-ish hitter right now out of the gate, 200 to 220 projection in the major leagues, that might not stick a catcher. No, thank you. Only 20 home run power, I'm out on that. But as a catcher, that'll still probably play. Be like Mike Zunino-ish with, kind of not quite as volatile.
Never roster catchers.
Right, yeah, and he's a perfect reason not to, right? Because remember 2 years ago, Nottingham was the talk of the town.
Mm-hmm. And I traded for him, and despite the strategy I always talk about, and now he's no longer on my team.
I'm probably partially to blame for that, but
you are.
Yeah, well, don't hate me. catchers are 20 grade in general, just for fantasy. And Brett Phillips laughs are 20 grade. Freddie Peralta is another guy. He's an average stuff across the board. Nice strikeout totals, 169 and 122 and 120 innings. So I think he's a guy to watch. He's in double A. He's kind of a command guy over anything right now. Good stuff though, still, but he's got a track, but he's probably buried a little bit by some of these arms. Trey Supak is probably a decent reliever. Carlos Herrera is another, they got him from Seattle. He's probably a reliever, right now. He's 6'2", 150 pounds listed. So to say he's small would be an understatement. But he's got a lot of projection. So he's a nice name to follow. I like the stuff a lot, but the frame, crushing the durability a little bit, but nobody pitches 200 innings now, so durability is an overrated thing for a pitching prospect nowadays. So, yeah, and they have an interesting system here. You got to remember a lot of these starting pitchers, too. They have Josh Hader that they could easily flip back into the rotation. So he's another high volatility but high upside arm that can go with Corbin Burns and guys of that ilk that are in the system. There's a lot of premium talent here, but all these players have an enormous amount of risk, which makes ranking the system out pretty difficult. But
all right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
until the dawn.